to the Intentional Wellbeing Podcast with Shannon Kaneshike of Fringish. You might know her as a plus size, and I just want to call you a yoga teacher because I would like to, you know, be a yoga teacher, not necessarily be a plus size yoga teacher. Like, that needs a distinction, but we live in a world where that is very important. Shannon helps folks use movement, meditation, and ritual practices to connect with the entirety of themselves. Shannon has spent lots of years trying to make themselves smaller through personality, dreams, all of that, because society has told us collectively that that's what we need to do to be accepted. Truthfully, Shannon is changing that. She's out there sharing her yoga. Shannon started slowly accepting their body as it was, reconnecting through movement, self-study, self-compassion, and dreaming big so that the rest of us can also dream big. Shannon teaches yoga and practices yoga. Started by watching Yoga with Lila on PBS. Oh my gosh, I remember that.
Yeah.
And you could never know when it was on because it was never consistent. You would just like hope it was on. And you made peace with moving your body through the practice of yoga. And we're here today to talk about fat liberation. I just want to make a point here that fat liberation is the basis for the body positive movement right now. So in 1971, we started this conversation around fat liberation and seeing fat people as human beings and treating fat people as human beings. And that's how it started. And then the offshoot of body positivity started, which is problematic in a number of ways, but also good in that we're talking about all bodies now in positive ways. Welcome to the podcast, Shannon. Yay!
Thank you, Diane.
Welcome. Thank you for joining me. Tell me a little bit about your journey into yoga. I read your bio, but I want to hear firsthand what made you think, okay, yoga is for me, and I want to share it with a plethora of people.
Well, thank you first for having me here. I'm super excited.
Of course.
So for me, as I mentioned, you mentioned in the bio, I started practicing with my mom when I was like six. And we'd watch Yoga with Lilas, and I'd check out library books with like the animal name yoga, you know, for kids. And I really enjoyed it. I liked feeling connected to my body. I didn't have that language, but that was definitely what was happening. You know, I just recently started to realize that I also deal with like ADHD.
A lot of people recently. Yeah.
And I feel like when I was a kid, I really loved like the bound postures because I feel like it kind of held everything contained. It was just like sensory, like such a good feeling. And that stayed with me for a really long time. And so I would practice on and off throughout my teens. I'm really going to age myself here, but I had VHS tapes.
Me too. I'm with you. I see you. I am
DVDs.
You.
DVDs.
Yes.
I think the big one was like
tapes.
Oh gosh. The Gaiam series.
Yes.
Yeah. Because they were really, really, easy to get your hands on. Yep. I had like the Gaiam block. I had no idea what to do with it.
Yeah.
Because nobody ever taught me. They just sold it to me.
Yep. totally.
And I'm like, I must be able to use this for something.
What? I don't know, but I'll figure it out.
Because none of the videos ever showed you what to do with it. But I spent a lot of time frustrated because I would look at the people on these tapes and be like, I can't do what they're doing. I must not like have a serious practice. I must not be doing it enough or really understanding what I'm supposed to do. Instead of realizing that, you know, my body just didn't move that way. And I also think like a lot of people who get into yoga young, without any connection to the culture behind it. I'm hypermobile. So I got a lot of positive feedback about being able to bend myself into all these shapes, when I couldn't do things like run very quickly or anything like that. So in school, we would have like yoga modules because our gym teacher, I think, enjoyed yoga. So they added it.
Nice.
That was like the one thing I could do. That and square that dancing.
Yeah. And, oh, that wasn't competitive, that nobody was met. That didn't have like a quantitative measurement, right? It was just you did what you did, right?
Well, I mean, this was elementary and middle school gym. So, like, of course, they made it a little bit more competitive.
Of course. Yeah.
But I remember doing like headstands.
Ah.
Like the triangle push-up headstands. And I don't do them anymore, but I did then.
Yeah.
And so it was one thing that, like, there was a lot of positive reinforcement around it for me.
Mm.
Which made me feel like, well, maybe my body isn't all bad. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I've been heavy since about third grade.
Mm-hmm.
And as I got older, I would come, I would leave, I would come, I would leave. And then I met Chanel Deer, who is a yoga instructor here in Toronto, who is in a larger body.
Nice.
And I started going to her classes, and I was like, oh wait. So I can move my body. I can do this. And Chanel introduced me to your work as well. It was like,
Chanel,
check out Diane Bondi. And I was like, oh my gosh. And that's, you know, when I was like, oh, this is amazing.
I love this.
And with the typical hyper focus of anyone with ADHD, my life became yoga. Because I was like, this is connecting so many pieces for me. It feels good in my body. When I had moved to Hawaii, I had really started hiking a lot and realizing that movement was something that I craved, even though I was always told as someone who was fat that I couldn't be active. Like, you won't enjoy it. You'll get sweaty. Or the worst, like, be careful, you might have a heart attack. Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Especially when I started hiking. Like, yeah. Like, be careful. It's an intense trail.
Stop it.
This is the tie into fat liberation, I guess, is this, like, society told me because of the way that my body was built that I couldn't be active. I couldn't like movement. And then thrust me into situations where I was judged for my body in movement spaces, you know, like going to gyms. As an adult, yeah. I was bullied at a gym, you know. And
gross.
It's just yoga provided a space where I could practice on my own, I could reconnect to my body, and where I could find. And again, I was lucky because I found a community of yoga practitioners in larger bodies that I could plug into, and I could feel safe to experiment and get assistance. And that's when I decided that I wanted to teach because I wanted to help other people feel as good as I felt. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to provide that space for people because everyone deserves a space where they can feel like they can experiment and they can reconnect.
I think it's so important that you qualified that statement with your experience of being told simply because your body is shaped the way it is or shows up the way it does, that you're somehow not entitled to movement. And the fact that you might get sweaty is going to be a deterrent to movement. And for me, I don't know. When I'm sweaty, I kind of feel alive. I feel like my body's doing all the things that it needs to be doing to keep me moving. And I'm grateful for I'm sweaty. Like, I can just think about sweating and actually start sweating. It doesn't take much for me to sweat regardless. And I'm just like, you know, this is my body's regulatory system showing up for me. And when I see people out there who are working, not necessarily hard, but are like sweating in whatever it is they're doing, I go, your body's doing what it's supposed to be doing. It's working optimally for you. It's showing up for you. And when we hear like bullshit stories, like your metabolism this and your metabolism that, I said, put your hands underneath your armpits. Are they warm? that's your metabolism working for you. It's not broken. It's working. Like, you, there's nothing wrong with the body that you're in. And the amount of time that I spend, and I'm past this point now in my career, trying to convince folks that you're okay in the body that you are, I'm now trying to focus my attention on people who are trying to be like, okay, I'm working towards that. I'm feeling what you're saying. I'm finding spaces where I belong. And I want to keep encouraging those people to come forward instead of trying to encourage the world who's against fat bodies that they should change their mind. I'm not interested. That's not my ministry. I'm sure there's somebody out there who can talk to you about changing your perspective. I'm here for the person that, like, forever was like, I've always wanted to do this. Like you said, I've been told I can't do this, and I'm going to show you that you can, and I'm going to show you just how that happens. So I'm grateful for you in this space. You are a great example, and you're an example of representation matters. That statement's incomplete in and of itself. Representation matters in terms of teaching us how to be in relationship with others. Representation matters in creating diverse spaces. So when I hear representation matters, it's not enough for me anymore. There has to be that additional piece to it. So tell me, what was your first yoga teacher training like? And were you able to train with a teacher that was adaptive and could see you and like teach you how to create these variations within your body? Because most 200-hour teacher trainings just spend a lot of time in ableism.
Yeah. So the yoga teacher training that I went to, I'm now a member of the staff.
Faculty? Nice.
Yeah, the faculty. Because it's not that it was a bad experience. Everyone tried, but they just had no experience in fat bodies, like, you know, actual lived experience.
Oh, yeah.
So myself and I took the training with a friend who's also fat. We kind of taught as much as we learned. You know, and
you were an asset to that training.
I was okay to do it because I kind of knew going into it that that's what would happen. Mm. But I can say, like, they listened and they worked with us, you know? So like when we came up to a posture that we maybe had some issues with, but didn't quite know like
what it was.
Yeah. We'd play and, you know, and they would assist the best they could. Mm. But it's definitely, I wish that at the time I had access to a space that was like dedicated for larger bodies, or where, you know, the teacher had been in a large body, because no matter what, like, I'm a really strong proponent in teaching from lived experience. And I think that you should be able to teach anyone who comes into your classroom. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to like teaching certain populations, you know, and holding like space uniquely for them, mm-hmm. That you should be a member of that community.
Agreed.
You know, because the hardest thing is, you know, I'm at the point where I'm comfortable enough with my body. We're going to be like, look, my belly's getting in the way. Mm. What can I do? Mm-hmm. But most people are just going to quietly sit in the corner and feel like
diminished.
Like there's something wrong with them.
Yeah, diminished in some way.
Yeah. And even if the teacher has the best intentions, if you haven't been in that place, mm-hmm. most likely I feel like you're going to not know what to say. And mm-hmm. some people, they just freeze up. Mm-hmm. They don't say anything. Mm-hmm. Or they say way too much and it becomes the issue. And this is, you know, like multiple intersecting identities,
of
you know,
course.
Like when,
yeah,
it, obviously, like, yeah. you know, yep. So yeah, it's just, it wasn't a bad experience.
It was an educational experience.
It was, I feel like, you know, it helped me become a better teacher. Certainly. It got me over my fear of speaking up.
Nice.
And that was helpful. And the fact that, like, you know, they really did work with us. And then they have since tried to make sure that it's part of the curriculum now.
Good.
You know, so.
You're a big part in changing the structure of the 200-hour teacher training program, which I've been a part of since 2009 when I started running my own 200-hour teacher trainings. And you just taught to bodies that were able to do 80, 90, 95% of what the textbook would require. And for so long, neither the Yoga Alliance or anybody else seemed to see a problem with just teaching able-bodied people how to do calisthenics for the most part, that we were missing the other seven parts or the seven limbs of yoga. The first one being in, you know, the very first one or the very first yama of ahimsa, in watching people struggle. And it's kind of interesting because Desikachar, you know, one of the preeminent yoga educators, rest in peace, and his children afterward, one of his major quotes that you hear like paraphrased all the time is, don't leave your students where they are, meet them where they are. And we weren't doing that. It was just like this fast, hot, moving vinyasa. And if you couldn't keep up, you didn't deserve to be there. And you have been changing that just by showing us how to move and telling people it's okay to move in their bodies and being okay to show yourself moving in your body. Cause I think that's hard for a lot of folks, is seeing themselves on film. And now that we've been through a pandemic and have been staring at ourselves on Zoom all this time, we're even less good at seeing our bodies move.
Yeah. And first, like, just thank you, because coming from you, who's done so much in the space for folks in larger bodies, for folks in disabled bodies, like, it means so much. So thank you.
Well, I appreciate you.
But I think like one of the biggest parts of my fat activism is simply existing publicly.
Yeah, that's huge.
You know, like there's fighting for legislative change. There's fighting for societal change. And then there's just living and letting people see you live. And like that's where my activism sits right now. You know, that's what I have capacity for. So that's where I am.
And that's a big thing to do, is to be unapologetically yourself in these spaces that really hate fat folks and places that make it difficult for fat folks to feel like they belong. It is the biggest F you to show up and go, you know, I get to be in this space, and you don't get to dictate who gets to, you know, experience life, and that I don't owe you anything, right? I get to show up. And I think that I keep saying the word huge, but it is, it's like, it's all encompassing when we show up as ourselves and we're willing to put ourselves out there. And that's what I appreciate most, is that there's no fear to see yourself. Well, I don't know that there's no fear, but you put it out there, and there's a lot of hate in the world. So you must get a lot of that just nasty vitriol like thrown at you. How do you deal with that? I know how it feels as a Black person to get that. I've been in a really tender space for the last few days, and my word of choice is F you and blocked. That's where I'm at just right now. That's where my feelings are just right now. I don't have the capacity for anything else right now. And I'm not even apologizing. I'm just like, it really, is this what we're doing today? Well, F you and off you go. Not my ministry to convince anybody. That's been my new thing. It's, you know, I'm not here to convince anybody. I'm here for the folks who want to support and become better at supporting.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely, the trolling is real. And it's funny because on different platforms, it's different levels. IG is pretty not great. Instagram's not great.
Yeah, I would
great.
Imagine. TikTok is even worse.
I've done a lot of preemptive blocking on Instagram, where I just went to accounts that I know are, or if I see somebody trolling someone else, I'm like, okay, I'm just going to go there and block.
Yeah.
TikTok's pretty not great, but I think I use hashtags pretty effectively to appeal to who I'm talking to.
You're very selective about your audience.
And YouTube is hell.
Just turn off the comments. Just turn off the comments.
Especially on shorts right now. Oh my gosh. Mm-mm. Like the same post that will get like, you know, like positive attention on Instagram and TikTok will just pull out all the trolls on YouTube. And I'm just like, okay, here we are. You know, it's funny because one of my biggest fears for ever since cell phones came out was that I would be turned into a meme somewhere.
Right. Yeah.
Someone would see me, would take a picture of me eating in public somewhere. Someone would, especially in Hawaii when I was wearing bikinis, and so I would hide from every camera for most of my life. It's really only within the past 2 to 3 years. It kind of started, I started taking more photos when I had my son, because I didn't want to be the mom that wasn't in the photos.
I'm that mom.
And I, my dad had passed away and I realized I had almost no pictures with him. Mm. And I'm like, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do that. Mm-hmm. So I started taking more, but they were just like for our family.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
And then when I started getting on Instagram, like the fear was real. I had a private account for a long time. And then I was just like, you know what? No. I started doing like eating videos on Tuesdays.
I love that. I loved Tuesday. It. You made that spam thing. That cultural spam meal. I went and bought spam. We seeded as a kid. I know.
Spam musubi.
Oh my gosh. When you made that, I'm like, let me go get spam right now.
Oh yeah. But that was largely to get over my fear of eating in public.
Right.
You know, it's like, no, like this is, I'm allowed to enjoy my food, even if I'm fat.
Of course.
And I don't have to worry, you know, because when you're fat, it doesn't matter if you are eating something that's quote unquote healthy. Yeah, I know. Like then it's like, oh, well, you must not eat that all the time or else you wouldn't look like that. And if you're eating something like a dessert or a snack cake,
dare you?
Well, now I know why you're fat.
Oh, for God's sakes.
You know, and so it's like there's no winning. There's no winning.
Yeah.
So it just became like, you know what? I'm just going to eat. Yeah. And I'm going to face this fear and I'm going to deal with it. And it was the same like when I posted my first like tasteful semi-nude photo. Because I'm like,
very
you know tasteful, what?
Very artistic.
This is my body. Very artistic. there was only one light. Oh, no. Yeah. but like very, it was like, okay, I'm afraid.
Of course.
I'm going to do it.
You're going to face my fear. That's really amazing.
Because like my thing is when I get scared, I either have to run towards it or it doesn't exist. I'm not doing it ever. it's one or the other. and the same with like, you know, with postural videos, you know, my big fear was that somebody would be like, but that's not how you do Warrior Two.
Yeah, no, you need to shut up. That's not true. Nobody said that.
And then it came down to like, you know, well, when you have a fat body, it looks different in postures because you can't see the skeleton. Like I know in a plank that I'm there.
You can feel it. You can feel
but,
it.
But you know,
body.
My butt's up here, my belly's down here, and it looks like I'm bent. And you know what? I'm fine with that because I know how I feel.
Exactly.
And that's when it really became about like, yeah. So like my biggest fear was becoming a meme, and I actually became a meme.
You did?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I had taken some photos with Suglit, and I was so happy with them, and I posted them, and they ended up on a troll site. And, you know, but here's the thing. The fear of it was so much worse than when it happened.
Oh, that's
like,
a good lesson.
Living my whole life afraid of it, I miss so much.
Mm-hmm.
And when it happened, I was like, oh, this is shitty for about a day.
And then it was like rearview mirror after that. Like, who cares?
It's like, you know what? Yeah. Those people... like they're gonna look at me whether it's in a meme or out on the street and they're gonna treat me the same way. I have lost nothing.
True story.
And so then it just became about like, can I practice acceptance
That's a hard one.
And, you know, can I accept that trolls are people who are hurting?
Yes. Yeah.
And I can both feel compassion and say, I'm sorry that you feel that way. Mm-hmm. And also say, fuck you, you can't treat me like that.
I love this. So, I love this.
That's where I am right now.
I love like, this.
Aw, you're hurt. I'm sorry. I'm
sorry, but it's really not go my away. Problem. Yeah, go away. Yeah. You need to seek, like, again, I love that you are more focused on the folks that you can help as opposed to changing the minds of people who are set in their ways. And it's very true. People who, I always say, people who are happy with themselves or content in their life aren't trolling other folks because they have a life. Like they're not out here feeling sorry for themselves and dragging other people down with them because of whatever it is. And the process of self-healing and getting over your own childhood trauma is your work to do. Mm-hmm. And it's not work that we necessarily want to do online. Maybe some people gain, you know, what they need online. But if you're out here, you know, just being horrible to people for no reason, it's that's your work to do. Like, why do you feel compelled to create these sites, be on people's pages? Like, this, you need to liberate yourself from your own self-hate, because that's what that is. That's insecurity and self-hate. And in order to feel somehow powerful, you need to come for somebody who's from a vulnerable population and just kind of dump your garbage all over them. And nobody's here for that.
It comes from a place where they feel like they've done the work. And they're angry that somebody is getting away without doing it, as far as they're concerned. But, you know, again, like, it's the same people that like don't want student loan forgiveness because they paid back their loans. And I'm like, but don't you want more for the people around you?
Exactly.
Yeah, it's the same general concept, you know, and I don't understand it. I mean, like, I understand it in theory, who has time for that much anger? Who wants to waste their energy that way?
Yeah. There's people out there that have nothing better to do with their time than to do this, which I find just shocking, because there's so much more soul enhancing and uplifting stuff in being in community with others and being thoughtful of others, like, as opposed to just being in your dark little hole and dragging everyone down. Yeah. Tell me about your path to fat liberation. Tell me how that became something that you wanted for everyone. It's one thing to come to a point of self-acceptance for yourself. How do you take that bigger? Like, what, like, how did that happen for you?
Well, I don't know if it was really a choice. I mean, I grew up, you know, I saw my dad who was fat, and I saw him dieting, and he never said anything to me, but I saw the way that he treated himself. Mm-hmm. And that definitely had an impact. And as I got older, and started getting more interested in social justice in general, I started to see a lot of parallels between marginalizations. Not to say that they are exactly comparable, but the mechanism of marginalization and what that means in terms of access to privilege and what privilege actually is. Mm. And the thing is, privilege is how everyone should be treated.
Yeah.
Privilege shouldn't exist because everyone should be treated that way. It isn't about getting rid of treating people well.
Yeah.
Passing on knowledge, all of those things. It's that everyone should have access to it. Mm. And I started seeing, as I saw the lies about race and ethnicity and disability and gender, it took me a long time to start to see the lies in weight stigma.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was so ingrained in me that this was a personal failing.
Mm.
And so it took me a long time to make the jump. You know, for a long time, I was really dedicated to making my body smaller. Mm. And it never worked, no matter how much I did. So the path to fat liberation really came through looking for equity in other spaces. Mm. And, you know, for me, like, I had to go through body positivity to get to fat liberation.
Okay.
Because first I had to, the way that I see it is that body positivity as it exists now mm-hmm. is about your relationship with yourself.
Okay. Yeah.
And my relationship with myself in that way was very damaged. Mm. So I had to reconnect to, it's okay to be me. Mm-hmm. It's okay to feel good about me. It's okay to like who I am and how I look.
Yeah.
And accept that before I could be like, I am worthy of all of these things. And I actually have dealt with discrimination mm-hmm. that wasn't my fault.
Mm-hmm.
To move out of kind of like the self-blame and the victim blaming. And then step into, oh, wait.
Yeah.
Now I can put these two pieces together and I can see that people treat me differently because of my body size, not because I am a bad person because of my body size.
But that's a huge distinction.
Just because of my body size. And then it really, you know, kind of grew from there into, this is a systemic issue.
Yeah.
You know, this is a feature, not a bug. And then I started seeing the connections between, you know, thanks to Dr. Sabrina String's book, the connections between race and weight stigma, the connections between disability and weight stigma. And I started to learn about the social model of disability that says that disability isn't about a physical impairment. It's about the lack of access to mm-hmm. participation in society.
Yes.
So it's not my weight that makes me disabled, if we're looking at it that way. And this is a complicated thing.
Yes.
But it is the fact that spaces are not built for someone my size.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started to see disability and, you know, fat liberation as really shared struggle.
Yes. Yeah.
And then to see, well, if we understand about the idea of Eurocentric body image and Eurocentric body standards, then race and fat liberation are also a shared battle.
Yeah. Connected.
And so in this way, like, it's all about equity.
Yes.
It's all about liberation. And then it just grows. It grows. And of course, like, I'm not comparing.
No.
But, you know, it's the idea that, though. Like, yeah, exactly. Like, you know, Kimberly Crenshaw, you know, really, really laid it out.
Yeah.
You that can there have are multiple marginalizations.
Exactly. We can, the same way we can have multiple identities, the same thing that two things can be true at the same mm-hmm. time. I think we really get caught up and stuck in this binary that it's either or instead of it's and. And that's a really big distinction I think you make in that conversation. Something that you said that really hit me between the eyes just now, that just was like, you know, do you remember those commercials? I could have had a V8. I never liked V8, so I never was going to have a V8. So thanks, but no. You know, is that you are not a bad person because of the size of your body. That is something that is not taught to us. And that the size of our bodies are dependent on the actions that we are doing or not doing. And what was really instrumental in me finding acceptance with my own body was when I was first diagnosed with Graves' disease. I'm in remission. I just got my, yay, I'm Yay. Off my meds. I know this just happened this week. Well, last week.
I'm so happy for you.
Thank you. That was a horrible journey and I don't wish it on anyone. That what I was doing had nothing to do with the size of my body, because with my Graves' disease, which is a hyperactive thyroid, it didn't matter what you were doing. Your body was just shedding itself. And it was a very scary thing. And the amount of people that came up to me and congratulated me for being ill and, you know, was really showed me how the world viewed me one way. And now that I'm back to where I was prior to my disease, I noticed the change in how people treat me this other way, right? And it's really hard not to start to blame yourself for this. And your body is years, centuries, if not, of ancestry and created to make you survive. Like, it knows what it's doing. It understands what it's doing. It's working to keep you alive, and it does it in a numerous different ways. We are not all meant to look like one way. And that's the binary that not only capitalism teaches us, but white supremacy teaches us, yes, and oppression teaches us, that there's a binary. There's one way to be. There's one color to be. There's one way to show up in the world. Or we create these social constructs. And if you don't fall into one of two categories, that you're somehow other and you're not welcome. And those things intersect with race and gender and disability and body size and ability and age, and all the things are touched by that. There are multiple intersections of oppression, and the tool of oppression is all about control. So having everybody look the same or have the same size body has nothing to do with health, has nothing to do with recognizing humanity. It has everything to do with controlling everybody in a way that benefits one structure, one person, one identity group. And unless you unpack that in your quest for self-acceptance, you will forever run in that hamster wheel of I'm not good enough, or I need to do this, or I need to be smaller, or whatever it is that you think you need to be. I need to be lighter, whatever it is, right?
Exactly. And, you know, monocultures are not healthy.
Oh, no.
By, you know,
a long
by definition, you know, yeah, when it comes to things like gender, when it comes to things like body size, nature is diverse,
yes,
always diverse.
Yes.
And we need to come back to that.
And I think we also need to come back to the idea that we have a shared humanity. And I think that's, yes, something that's actually going to be one of the pitfalls or downfalls of humanity, is rife individualism. And I've been saying this for a very long,
yes,
time, that I have a favorite comedian. He can be a little raw. He can be a bit much. But what he says at the core, I think it's an act, at the core of what he says is that every individual group of people, like whatever ethnic or cultural group you belong to, gets a little piece of the information. Okay. So, you know, Black folks get a little piece of the information. Asian folks get a little piece of the information. People with disability gets a little piece of the information. And if we don't all come together and talk to each other, none of us, we'll never get the whole story. We'll be forever in these little bubbles and missing a large piece of the experience of humanity if our friends only look like us, right? Yeah. Or we only subscribe to one kind of philosophy, or we're not hearing the experiences of other folks' lived experiences. We will always be limited in our understanding of humanity if we do this monoculture thing, or we think in terms of binaries.
Yeah.
That's just my arrogant opinion.
No, completely. I mean, I think that's where, for me, like, the yoga comes in. You know, it's also, you know, kind of shared with other philosophies, but the idea of, like, universal consciousness, that there is an, yeah, element of us that is just, it's present in all of us. Mm-hmm. And the fact that we are separate is an illusion.
Absolutely.
And I think once we can learn to celebrate for other people and offer compassion to other people and grieve with other people, you know, the closer we get to understanding that everyone's pain is our pain, everyone's joy is our joy, the better the better we'll be.
Absolutely. And there's a quote, I just was talking about it in the last podcast I was recording. There's a quote that our liberation is tied to each other. And yes. I don't understand how people can't see that. Yeah. And until everybody is liberated, none of us are liberated. You were going to be caught up in the complete lie that we've been told forever, that there's only one way to be, or there's only one way to show up, or there's, you know what I mean? And I, people need to understand that. And having compassion and empathy and seeing people for their differences, which is okay, folks, right? We are not meant to be the same. No. It's okay to be different and to celebrate those differences. And I love how you do that unapologetically through all your social media platforms, and that you are representation with empathy. You are representation with connection. You are representation with understanding. And that's what we need. And that's what we need the world to see. And it's amazing to see you blossom, and it's amazing to watch your content. For whatever reasons, it doesn't, the algorithm changes every 5 minutes, so it doesn't show up as much. So I have to go and seek you out and like your stuff so that it's a regular in my feed. That's something I don't like. Lately, I've been getting a lot of men telling single women that they're not happy in my feed. I don't know how I got on that feed. I am so over. That's another bunch of people who are really insecure and need to do some self-study. I'm like, how? I was talking to my partner yesterday. I'm like, why am I getting these videos on my feed? I must have commented somewhere and now I'm in the loop. But I appreciate you being out here and sharing so, so much. So tell us, how can we get in contact with you? Like, how can our listeners connect with you and share in the work that you do? I'm going to link everything in the show notes below, so don't worry. And I'll be sharing this all over social media, so don't worry. But I want to hear it straight from Shannon. How do people connect with you, practice with you, perhaps talk to you if they're looking for ways to find their way to their own self-acceptance?
Yeah. So I have a website, fringeish.com. There you can find a video on demand library and all of my live stream classes. I also have
a very nice website, by the way. Very nice.
Thank you. I also have a YouTube. Also fringeish. Everything's fringeish. Makes it easy.
It does.
TikTok, Instagram. I've been trying to limit the amount of time I am on the social media.
It's hard. I know
it's hard. It's so hard.
Sometimes it's super engaging, though. I've learned so much. I wish I could get a degree from what I've learned on TikTok alone by following certain creators who are really good at educating within that space, yourself included.
Oh, thank you. And we've created such a community, I feel like, especially since 2020, in terms of like spaces for fat folks, spaces for people who are fighting for all types of liberation. So I'm mostly on IG, not gonna lie. That's where you'll find
me. That's where I feel comfortable. I feel like, given my, I'm not trying to be ageist. I'm just saying, given where I am at this particular spot in my life, that's what feels most comfortable to me. Like Facebook, I'm on there. I'm like, yeah, I don't like it here. Instagram feels really comfortable. And TikTok, I just go down a rabbit hole, to be honest. Yeah. I can be like just watching one creator and then it links to another and then they have something else to say. And before I know it, 2 hours of my day has been gone. And I was supposed to be, I don't know, doing anything else, grocery shopping, anything. I was supposed to be doing anything else, and that's all fallen by the wayside.
I go to TikTok to disassociate. I go to Instagram to hang out, and I go to YouTube to learn. those are my...
I love that.
Also why I really want to grow my YouTube, because I want to make sure that I have, you know, it is, as well as fat liberation, class is really closely tied to that. And I want to make sure I have lots of accessible free content for folks who need it.
Absolutely.
So that's always available as well.
That's okay. This is real life. I don't know what that was, but this is real life. I have two questions to go before we end our podcast. Tell me how you came up with the name Fringeish for yourself. That's the first question. And the second question is, what does Shannon do for Shannon that's intentional well-being that has nothing to do with creating content for anything else, has nothing to do with looking after anybody else, has everything to do with Shannon's well-being. So first, how did you become Fringes? How did you come up with that name? And second, what do you do just for you that's intentional to your well-being?
Well, Fringish came from the idea that I always felt like I was pushed to the fringe no matter what space I was in. Mm. But understanding the amount of privilege that I do carry.
That's the ish part, right?
Yep. As someone who is white, as someone who is generally like cisgender passing.
Yes.
Yeah. So ish.
That's the ish part.
That's the ish. And what do I do for me? You know,
just for you. It has to be just for you.
It's so hard.
I know. We just had this conversation in the pre-show, which you can catch on Patreon. But yeah, we just had this conversation, like just for Shannon. Has to do with nobody else.
Just for Shannon. You know, I'm gonna say, like, I take time. I open up my YouTube and I watch Try Guys.
I do love them.
While I eat cheese.
That's just for Shannon.
That's just for me. No one gets anything from that but me.
That's what I want. We have to do. Yeah. As healers and as people who are invested in other people's liberation, we also have to invest in our own liberation, which means stepping out of that space for a while. And I love that. I'm obsessed. I know this is going to sound stupid, but I'm obsessed with gym fails. Like watching videos of people doing really stupid things. Cause in my brain, I'm like, what were you thinking? Like, what? And if I'm at the gym and I have a gym fail because I can't figure out how to use a piece of equipment, I'm sure, like, you have the same fear of becoming a meme. I have the same fear of becoming a gym fail video when somebody's looking over at me and I'm like, what is this? And get on something backwards or upside down or, you know, I don't even know. I'm just looking around to see if somebody's videoing me. And once it happens, I'm sure somebody will be, is this you, like, dropping stuff or knocking over a whole row of something? Because that's just who I am.
Those machines are complex.
I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just trying to get stronger and have more flexibility in my hips. And the only reason I work out, and it happened when I traveled to, I was just in St. Louis. I don't know how to travel light. And I, after seeing the videos of Lester B. Pearson Airport with everybody's luggage everywhere, and I think it was San Francisco as well, or LAX or something where everybody's luggage was everywhere. I don't check a bag on the best day, but I'm certainly not checking a bag for sure now. So I have like a 40-ish pound carry-on because I'm really jamming everything I need and might need in that carry-on. And if you fly in an American airline, they won't weigh that. If you fly a Canadian airline, they'll weigh it. But I have to be able to get that 40-pound carry-on in the overhead bin because nobody's looking to help me with that, right? Mm-hmm. And my spouse is always like, you pack it, you carry it. That's what they say, right? That's what he says. You pack it, you carry it. So that's the only reason I'm at the gym. And so the other day when I was getting off my flight in St. Louis, packing way too much for like 2 days, I was like getting ready. Deep breath, brace my core, bend at my knees, pick up my bag, lift it over my head, get the overhead bin. And for the first time in history, somebody said to me, would you like some help with that? I'm like, no. This is why I go to the gym. It's the only reason. This is why I go to the gym. I want to be able to travel and haul my luggage. That's it. And be able to fall when I fall down, like just be able to get up by myself. That's the only two reasons. I'm working on those two things. That's what's intentional well-being for me, is getting that 40-pound overhead into the overhead bin. And hoping that I can get it closed. You know, these are the things that I'm currently working on. I felt compelled to share that with you. I love you so much, Shannon. Thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thank you so much, Diane. And thank you for the podcast. Oh, I listen all the time. I love it so much.
I'm glad. I'm just out here talking a lot of, I don't know, about myself and my opinions. But
which are amazing.
Thank you. I'm glad you're here for it. I want to thank everybody for tuning in for the Intentional Wellbeing Podcast. check out Shannon's website on fringish.com. All of this will be linked in the show notes. Access to her free content on YouTube, Instagram, and TikTok. You will love it. If you don't know who she is, now you know. Thank you, everybody. Be intentional with your well-being, and I will see you next time.